We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Fans, how you doing? It's your boy John of the Macri for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Playoffs. I wish I could do the was it Jim Moore, right? Is it Jim Moore?
Yes, Jim Moore.
Okay, Jim Moore. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. We are coming at you on a Tuesday.
Yes.
Good thing I remembered the schedule for the week. I guess it's safe to say it now because I'm pretty sure everything is pretty solidified. We are shooting for five this week, 5 for 5. So we obviously had myself and Jeremy coming out on Monday. Usually we do Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but the Knicks don't make the playoffs every year. Hopefully they will from now on, moving forward. But we're celebrating. We're going to we should be able to put out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. And boy, is this a doozy. Thank you to my producer, Andrew Claudio, for getting this one done. Mm-hmm. Today's episode features, he's not even a Hall of Famer once. He's in multiple Halls of Fame. Steve Holman, who is the Atlanta Hawks radio play-by-play man. He has been doing it since March of 1989. He has not missed a game, as he reminded me during our interview, because I knew it was 27-something. It's 27-20. So, if you're a history buff, he may wind up breaking Chick Hearn's Lakers record for most consecutive. I believe that's not a basketball record. I think that's a professional sports record for most consecutive play-by-play games done. He's a living legend. And we talked about the Hawks. We talked about Knicks and the Hawks. We talked about a little Hawks history. We got into a lot of fun stuff. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. We're going to get to him in a few minutes. Couple items. First, one, congratulations to Tom Thibodeau. NBA's coach of the, coach of the month, right?
Coach of the month for the month of May.
There we go. Giddy up. Long time coming. I think I've said it a few times in live streams after games. I thought if the Knicks, they got the 4 seed, that he would have a real shot for coach of the year. And I think he has a real shot for coach of the year. And I hope he gets it because I think he deserves it. So there's that. We also got some news today about capacity in Madison Square Garden for the playoffs. So James Dolan went and spoke on, where the hell did he speak? With Governor Cuomo. There we go.
Yeah.
And we were just talking, me and Andrew were just talking about this before we came on. It's definitely at least 50% capacity, but then Dolan said something to the effect of more than 13,000 fans, because there's going to be a vaccinated section, which could essentially be full capacity. And then there's going to be a non-vaccinated section where there's still separation. Whatever it is, there's going to be a lot more fans at MSG for the playoffs than there have been for the regular season. So, you know, go get vaccinated. And that's very good news. And James Dolan didn't say anything stupid today.
Yeah.
Also good news.
I was actually like low-key stunned how pro-vax and responsible he was. Like, oh,
right.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it was I'm here for all of it. We are obviously nothing but shills for James Dolan on this show.
Obviously.
Obviously. Goes without saying.
Nick Sand Rangers over here.
Before we get to Hall of Famer Steve Holman, I know that Andrew has some things he wants to ask me. Andrew, take it away, please.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't clarify something. You said that Chick Hearn has the record for consecutive games. He does in the NBA, but one of Steve Holman's former colleagues, Mr. John Sterling, broadcasted 5,000 consecutive, 5,060 to be exact.
Oh, so it is an NBA specific record.
Yes. Okay. He started calling the Yankees in 1989. I think the record even goes back even further when he was with the Braves. And he absolutely, in 2019 was the first time he took a day off in over 35, 40 years, something like that. So his record is high into the 5,000s.
We have a John Sterling story. If you're a Yankee fan, we have a John Sterling story coming at you on this podcast.
So Yankee fans, don't ever say a Mets fan never did anything for you, because that will be your one and only favor that I do, is clarifying that John Sterling, who is in every way, shape, and form inferior to Gary Cohen, has the record for consecutive games. Anyway,
I'm not going to say anything.
Since this is, you know, the first pod of the official postseason, we do have some time while in the immediacy to reflect on the season that was. And you mentioned the award that Coach Thibodeau just won, the Coach of the Month, and the award you believe he deserves, Coach of the Year.
Yep.
So I thought your listeners and your readers would enjoy hearing your award picks for the past 2020-2021 season, John. So I would like to get your official awards ballot that, you know, will only get counted here and probably should get counted because you watch the NBA religiously. Listen, Russillo doesn't even have one. I was stunned to hear that.
I was shocked too. I purposely didn't listen to the pod all the way to the point where they did their all NBA, because I wanted my mind to be separate. The only content I've consumed from anybody else as far as all NBA is concerned was, I think, whatever podcast Zach Lowe did about it a week or two ago, and whatever column
he'd had Arnovitz on. And
yes, that was it. Yeah. Okay. But they didn't really have any finality on it. They just kind of tossed some stuff around, and my opinions will be different, I think, from some of theirs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we'll
go through all six of the big categories. I'll get your picks, maybe your list of order of who will be like your top three or five in those picks. And then we'll get your three all NBA teams and any other straggling award mentions you'd like to make. If you want to throw an all defensive team out there, an all rookie team out there, you can. But for the first half of this pod, we'll give out awards for the previous season.
I like it. I thought about it. I'm not doing all defense because, full disclosure, I do not watch enough national NBA. Like, I personally don't feel like you could watch, like, if I watch on average a team play 3 to 6 games every year, I don't think that's enough to like know what a guy's defensive impact is like on a night to night basis. Not that anyone does, but I would not put those thoughts out there. And then all rookie, I could do a quick all rookie, but like, it's again, not something I feel strongly about. The other stuff though, I think that's different. So where do you want to get started?
So
you
the order me. I'm going to do this in for the main awards is in order of chances a Nick has to win one. So start with, in my opinion, not that the Knicks didn't play great defense this year, but defensive player of the year. I'd be stunned if any Nick gets a first place vote. To be honest, if any Nick gets a third place vote, I'd be surprised. So defensive player of the year, your winner and your top three.
So my winner for defensive player of the year, unsurprisingly, is Rudy Gobert. I think he... I think it's pretty clear. I think it's obvious. I will say, even though I'm not going to name an all defense team, I don't think any Nick has a realistic argument for to make an all defense team. I just want to throw that out there as well. I've tossed around in my head whether and whether it would be Noel or Bullock if I had to give someone a vote. It would, I think it actually would probably be Bullock, as crazy as that is to say. But Noel has a really good argument. And second on the list is a little tough. I'll go Ben Simmons. I don't say that with a ton of conviction, but I will go Simmons because I think of the versatility, really simply. And then third is really hard. And there's some obvious names. Giannis Antetokounmpo is an obvious name.
Reigning champ.
What's that? Yeah, the reigning champ. I think Jimmy Butler has a stealth argument for this. I think there's a few other guys that you could throw out there. Joel Embiid is probably going to wind up third, I think, if I had to guess. Although, actually, no. Simmons, if Simmons, are they really going to take two and three? Well, whatever. Joel Embiid would be in that conversation. I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I really do feel strongly about this. I'm going to go with Clint Capella. And it's not because we have a Hawks broadcaster on this episode. It's because I think so little of some of the Hawks defensive talent, and they can at least hold their own on that end of the floor because of Clint Capella. And I think Clint Capella is like really, really good at protecting the rim. I think he does some different things. That's kind of the closest you're going to get probably for me for a hot take. But yeah, I'll go Clint Capella as third.
How far down before you get to Bam?
Bam's really good.
Mm-hmm. But
the Hawks are, they're a better team. I think he has a bigger impact on their, I think you could stick some different players in there and it's the Heat. It's like, they're always going to figure out a way. Like the Hawks have been an utter dumpster fire on defense so often. And then Capella's been there and he's like, I don't know. He scares the hell out of me. I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. Next,
he's played a lot of games. Sorry.
Yes. Next in order would be Rookie of the Year. Shout out to Emmanuel Quickley, who I don't think will, I think he'll make an all rookie team, but an early flyer on Emmanuel Quickley plus 2000 to win it. That I took back in February obviously didn't pan out. Thank you, coach, for barely playing him in the second half of the season, completely canceling any chance of that happening. But your Rookie of the Year and your top three, John.
Again, I have to be genuine here. If Emmanuel Quickley had finished the year strong, I would say I would figure out a way to get him on my ballot. He's kind of, not that he's been bad, but his impact was like centered in like kind of that middle portion of the year. I'm going to go LaMelo Ball first, Anthony Edwards second, and Halliburton third.
I think it's the correct order.
Edwards was so bad for half the season, if not more than half the season. And honestly, I would even maybe consider sliding him down to third if they didn't actually – the fact that they actually started winning some games at the end of the year and like they finished – around 500 for their last 20 or so games. I think you could say what you want. Like the games don't have meaning, but like they had meaning to them and they had meaning to him. I think they're worth something. I think Quickley is as clear a fourth place finisher as there could possibly be. Mm-hmm. I think he has an argument over Halliburton, for third place. But I think Halliburton by the slightest of edges. And if you told me that you had Quickley third on your ballot, I would not fight you on that.
So next is the MVP, which again, this is an order of chances Knicks have to win. This is where I think we'll start to see a Knick get some legitimate votes. So I guess your top five for MVP, John.
So can I have to do a quick soapbox rant here. There's been this conversation. I feel like that, well, I guess maybe I should save this rant for all NBA. I'm going to save the rant for all NBA, but I'm going to point out something. I'm going to point out something when I give you my five. So here's my five. number one, Nikola Jokic. And I agree. Somebody said on Twitter today that anybody who doesn't, and I think they cover the Nuggets, but still, anyone who doesn't vote Nikola Jokic for first place for MVP should have to write 1,000 words on why they voted for who they voted for.
Yeah.
I actually wholeheartedly agree with that. Mm-hmm. Cause it's such a clear choice.
Like the Bart Simpson chalkboard where he just write over and over again. I vote for Nikola Jokic? Why didn't I? Yeah.
I wrote something a few weeks ago, which I'm going to reference a couple times, but I'm going to reference it for the first time right now, about how players from like not great teams historically have not been in the MVP conversation. Like they don't really get votes. At the time I wrote that, I think the Warriors were in 10th place. Since then, they won, I think, eight of 10 or 9 of 10 or something to finish the season, whatever it was. They finished really well. They finished the season in 8th place in a very tough Western Conference, 39-33, 6 games above 500. And for me, like, what is that team without Steph Curry? Are they the worst team in the league? Well, last year they were the worst team in the league, right? And I know they got a little bit better. So I'm going to give Curry my second place finish. And here's where it gets tough. Can I give you the rest of my ballot?
Yeah.
The rest of my ballot is Luka, Giannis, and Randall. I did
no
this.
Embiid. Wow.
We're getting there.
Oh, games played. Okay.
So, well, yeah, we're getting there. So I think the Luka and Randall, in terms of when you talk about value, right? How much they mean to their teams. I think you could make the argument that both of those guys are about as equally valuable to their respective teams. In terms of who's the better player, Luka Doncic is the better player. There's no question about that. Julius Randle's team did finished higher. They finished with a worse record, though. I think the Mavs have a little bit better team around Luka than the Knicks do. I have to go Luka third. Just because he's that good. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to Giannis and Randall. And Giannis and Randall, I had Randall above Giannis when I wrote my thing 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm going to be a bad Knicks content creator. I'm going to flip it right now. I'm going to put Giannis fourth. And I'm going to put Randall fifth. And the reason for that is I think if you look at what the Bucks would be without Antetokounmpo, they're a handful of games below 500 maybe.
I think they're around what the Raptors were, what the Wizards were. They're clearly missing a star, but there's talent there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me that they would have gone with just Middleton and Holiday and like the rest of those guys and like a league average player in Giannis'
33-32 win team.
32-33. Okay, so great. So that means Giannis is worth, you know, roughly 14 or 15 wins to that team. I believe Randall is worth more wins to the Knicks, but I also think that if you look at Giannis's numbers and you look at the efficiency and you look at everything else he's doing, you look at the advanced stats up and down every which way, it's enough to overcome the gap in what he means to his team versus what Randall means to his team. And then on the defensive end, Randall's had a very nice defensive year. I think Giannis is one of the 5 best defenders in the sport. So Giannis fourth, Randall fifth. Mr. Embiid played 70.8% of his team's games this year. Do you know, since Bill Walton won the award, having played 70.7%, off by 0.1%,
mm-hmm.
how many players have played that low of a percentage of their team's minutes and appeared in the top 5? Not one appeared in the top 5. We're talking about 43 years of NBA history.
I think you actually asked me this earlier in the year when we were discussing the MVP, and it's how many are there at least? Like, is it 2 or 3 or?
It's 0.
It's 0. Oh, that's the answer then. Okay.
So the only player who has played under 79, there's since Walton won the award, the only player to have played under 79% of his team's minutes or games, excuse me, and appeared anywhere on a ballot was Shaq in 1998, or whereabouts. And that was a really weird year, which I don't have to get into. And he finished fourth that year. He played in 73% of his team's games. So basically your argument has to be that Joel Embiid was so amazing mm-hmm. in the 70.8% of his team's games that he played, that he should overtake a guy who was like his entire team was based on his performance. I think if you take Embiid off the Sixers, I think there's an argument that they're still the three seed because I think they just rejigger the team around Simmons and off they go. They're not a contender, a real contender, but they're still damn good. Yes, I know Embiid's amazing defensively and his stats are what they are and they're incredible. No one's arguing that Joel Embiid's not a better player than Julius Randle or, you know, that's crazy. But this is about value. And Julius Randle provides more value to the Knicks that provided more value for the minutes he played than Joel Embiid provided to the Sixers this year. So Randle's my fifth on my MVP ballot.
It's interesting because the theme of your, I like the way you did your awards. And as somebody who's got kind of fed up with baseball and how like Mike Trout, they've just figured out a way to determine how many wins he'd be. Even if you want to pull Coles in wins above replacement, they're like, nope, he's worth 10 wins a year. He should win the MVP, even though they might win 57 games during the season. It's why I will understand. I don't think they should, but I will understand first place votes for Curry. Like he's had statistically a better year than his unanimous MVP year.
If Jokic didn't exist, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm. But it's why I will understand if they're like, listen, this is one of the worst teams in the NBA without him, and they're gonna be, you know, the eighth seed in the playoffs. Just from a value perspective, if you look at how like he went a step up from his, you know. The 73-9 team. So
yeah, but I will say this.
Well, I don't think there should be.
It would be unprecedented for a player on a team that finished this low in the standing. The last guy who are on a team who finished this low in the standings and finished as high as second was a then young man by the name of Michael Jordan in whatever year the first year he finished second. I think it was like 87, 88. No, it was maybe 86, 87. Yeah.
I understand there's a precedent, which is why I'm just saying Steph's season was unprecedented.
Oh, no, it was a crazy season, amazing season. That's what I mean. Look, I've had him second on my list. So there you go.
Sixth man of the year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't sit here and boast this, that, and the other thing about games played and then have Derrick Rose win this award. I will put Rose a third on the ballot, though, because I think it goes without saying that he has done more as a sixth man for his team in the games that he's played than anyone else. And it's not close on a per minute basis as a sixth man or a per game basis as a sixth man. His impact dwarfs whoever you want to give me, Jordan Clarkson or Joe Ingles or any of those guys. As far as like who should get the first two spots, I'm fine giving it to the two Utah guys in whatever order you want. I don't really care, to be honest with you. And I don't really have a strong opinion. So I'll go Ingles one, Clarkson two, because I like Joe Ingles. I've always liked Joe Ingles.
So the last two are interesting because one I think is locked up and will absolutely happen. And one should be, in a lot of people's opinion, especially Knicks fans' opinion, should be locked up. But if you listen to the scuttlebutt, it sounds like it's going to be.
It's not. Yeah. So
it's going to go the opposite way. So go coach of the year and give me your thoughts.
I mean, for me, it's pretty obvious. It's Tibbs, then Monty, and then. I'll go Quinn Snyder third. Mm-hmm. Although you could give me five or six guys but honestly, to me, like even Monty, you could kind of, to me, it's Monty is closer to the pack than he is closer to first. And I'm not going to rehash the argument that the discussion that Jeremy had and I had on yesterday's podcast, but like, you know, Chris Paul is the biggest reason why that team is where they are. Now, yes, I just went through how Julius Randle's fifth on my MVP ballot, which notably Chris Paul did not appear there. So how could I then say, here's the thing. Chris Paul's a point guard and he has a demonstrable history of going into teams and like doing what basically he did with Phoenix this year. Also, Phoenix has a shit ton more talent than the Knicks, or at least that was the perception before the year, which is why their over-under before the season started was, what was it, 41 games, I think, or 40?
Something like that.
39. It was 39 and a half, I think. Yeah. Maybe that was it. So 39 and a half, which means like consensus is that you're going to be a really good team. And they went from a really good team to a great team. Fantastic. All the credit in the world. Was it so clearly because he like changed the culture? I mean, this was a team that won 8 in a row in the bubble. Their culture had to be decent to do that. They have like again, we don't need to go through the talent. What Tibbs did here with this franchise that has all the respect to the goat shit in Phoenix has a much worse track record in terms of culture. And like, again, I'll just reference what Bernard and Oz or and Yash and me, this is Bernard's line and I'll steal it. The rot is in the walls. That was always like, whenever the Knicks like would potentially make a move that was like, we were like, oh, this is a good move. He's kind of a Debbie Downer. And he would be like, no. This thing is fucked from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always be the one to push back and be like, no, it's going to be fine. Everything's okay. But the reality is, if you look at 20 years worth of evidence, the evidence is there. Mm-hmm. They found a way to take the one decent thing that they had and they even tossed that away. So you look at Thibodeau to come in and like the fucking whole team is just singing Kumbaya every day in different, you know, voices and verses and whatnot. That's Tom Thibodeau. And like, yes, Leon Rose deserves a lot of credit and Wes and the coaching staff and the whole thing. It's Tibbs. It's Tibbs. Just it's Tibbs. We know it's Tibbs. I don't know how you don't give the award to him. It would be, it's going to be egregious when he loses. I don't think he's going to win. But he deserves it. He deserves it.
Yeah. We actually, I have Monty third. I would have put Quinn above.
That's fine.
Yeah. Like it's to an extent that, you're about to do your all. Well, because, okay, let's just real quick. Most improved player, Randall's going to win it.
I guess I'll go Porter Jr. for second. And then, I mean, Jeremy Grant really hasn't played a lot of games. Another one of those things. I don't really have a strong feeling about who should get third.
Can I say Zion? I know like he was expected to be great, but if just by definition of the award, if Luka can finish third last year, then why can't Zion finish third this year?
That's fine. I mean, another guy, and again, I'll steal this from the Low Post podcast episode from like 3 weeks ago. Clint Capella, I think, should also get some consideration.
Mm-hmm.
He might be their most important / best player. We're going to talk about him on this pod. I don't know, like Bruce Brown has had a really good season for Brooklyn. I mean, no, I'm serious. He's had a really good season. Like there's guys out there who are in the conversation. Like you want to give it to Jeremy Grant, give it to Jeremy Grant. That's fine too.
Randall's plus 5,000. This is the award that the Knicks fans can actually look forward to being presented to him this offseason.
And RJ, I think, was stronger in the conversation for me to be on the ballot until and I'm going to spoiler it. I'm writing about this for Tuesday's Knicks Film School newsletter. He's been slumping inside the arc but he's right there in the conversation still.
Well, food for thought for your newsletter. It's actually given me more confidence in his NBA future that like he can be a catch and shoot player if they go and get a guy that's going to be a little more ball dominant. Because if you say, OK, RJ, just be open from three, it's like, fine, you're a 40% 3-point shooter. What I was going to make about the coach of the year is like if you go down the list of all NBA and MVP candidates, like the Jazz have two guys that are going to be up in conversation for all NBA. The Suns are going to have two guys that are in the conversation for all NBA, and they're going to have the defensive player of the year in there. And they're going to have, a sixth man of the year in there. And like, it's Randall. And then
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When does the next Knick show up? We have Derrick Rose finishing third for sixth man, but other than that, the turnaround for all of this is unprecedented. Like, even the one coaching decision that I've questioned with Tibbs is not enough to be like, well, yeah, he still turned what I thought was going to be a 17-18 win team into a 41 win team. Like, the question of, well, why didn't you eventually bench number six? Regardless, he did eventually adjust his minutes. So I agree with you on Thibodeau. You're all NBA teams. Let's go through this quick. Your first, second, and third teams.
All right. So again, quickly, I will try to do this fast. So first team, as should surprise no one, it's the five guys that are on my MVP ballot: Steph, Luka, Jokic, Giannis, and Randall. Again, there are people. Oh, this is the soapbox thing. Really, very quick soapbox thing. People seem to have this view of all NBA that if you make it over a certain minutes or games threshold, it is as if the games you've played or the minutes that you've played don't matter, which is to say, if you play, whether you play 72 or 62 or 55 or maybe 57, 58, it doesn't matter. It's not a part of the conversation. And yet, when you fall below a certain threshold, then it's like, oh, we can no longer consider you because you didn't play enough games. I don't understand why a gray area doesn't exist in the All-NBA conversation. Why isn't there a sliding scale? And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, Randall played 71 games, but such and such player played 66, that should be a difference. I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the reason why I have Randall on my first team and I have Kawhi Leonard on my second team. Kawhi Leonard played 895 fewer minutes than Julius Randle this year. Now, you cannot tell me that Kawhi made it just barely over your threshold, for he appears on the NBA teams and we're not going to look at games played, and just ignore those 895 minutes. So what is it? If Kawhi had played 950 fewer minutes than Randle, then he's disqualified. Like, where it has to be a gray area. So I have zero qualms putting Randle on my first team. Again, everything I'm saying is like the few good men line. It's not about what I believe. It's about what I could prove. I could prove this shit.
Is that a few good men? Or I have no idea where that actual line originates. Is it a few good men? Is it Training Day?
No, it's a few good men. It's okay. When Demi Moore.
It's not what you know, what you can prove. Okay.
Well, because Demi is talking about, like, you don't think these guys are guilty, and he's and he's talked about you and so-and-so both live in the same dream world. It's not about what I believe. It's about what I can prove.
Okay.
And then I think all right, I know the law. I think that is also in that part. Okay. Sorry for that.
No, believe me, it helps.
Kawhi is on my second team and again, I don't really love any of these options. But Kawhi is on my second team with LeBron. Thought about sticking Butler on the second team instead. Jimmy Butler played 1,745 minutes. LeBron played 1,504. I just think LeBron was a certain modicum better than Butler, you know, that it overtook that discrepancy. So LeBron's on my second team with Kawhi. I have Embiid second team, Chris Paul second team, Damian Lillard on second team. I don't think any of that's very, those other positions are contrary. I mean, I think Embiid, Chris Paul, and Lillard are pretty lock solid. And then this was tough for me. There's about 10 to 15 names that I could have stuck in here. But I'm going to go with Gobert as my center. I'm going to go with Bradley Beal and I as one of my guards. Why'd you say, oh?
No, I'm going off the national scuttlebutt. He has been a lot of people's cuts.
That's fine. So
it also means you're I now, by process of elimination, see you not adding a couple people. I'm interested to see what your last two are.
So no, last three.
You said Jimmy Butler.
Butler's on my third team. Yeah. And then again, this is like, there's no easy options here. Tatum and Paul George are my last two.
Wow. Okay. So you don't have a Brooklyn Net on any of your teams.
No. And here's the reason.
Games
why.
Played.
Kevin Durant, I don't know how many games he played. It's not enough to be in this conversation. If James Harden had played all 44 of his games for the Brooklyn Nets, he would be on my third team. He played 8 of those games for the Rockets, and I don't care what his numbers were in those games. He was arguably the most actively detrimental player in the league during those 8 games. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if he gets like a negative 16 for those 8 games that he played. So he's not on it. And then, sorry, Kyrie. Can't say fuck off twice during the season and, you know, take some. I mean, I'm all here for mental health days. I respect it totally. Here's your penalty. You get your mental health, you don't make an all NBA team. And I'm not about to feel bad about that. So
I don't disagree. Okay.
Anybody else that's like, Zion, you know, you want to give me Zion over Tatum, Zion over Paul George? I would hear that.
Booker.
So Booker and Donovan Mitchell are the two obvious ones that didn't make it.
There's one more, but I'll wait until you get done with this.
Well, as far as Booker, I think of the two, I think Booker would probably be my pick. But I just think Beal was better. And Beal played a lot of games. And where are the Wizards without Bradley Beal? Whereas if you replaced, you know, Devin Booker with like a, you know, decent starting shooting guard. And again, that's more the MVP conversation than all NBA. Look, if you wanted to give me, you know, Booker over Tatum, I guess I would be okay with that. Again, this is like picking nits. You know, Mitchell is like a hair under Booker for me, but I think those guys are also, they're right there. It's close.
The other one, I guess we should say too, because of who we have on the show coming up next. Trae Young.
I don't think he belongs in the
conference. I don't either, but I have seen, now that I've dove into Hawks Twitter, I have seen the arguments being made, and I don't agree with them, but I appreciate people standing for their guy.
I would rather, and I think the positional stuff is abhorrent, but and I would rather have Embiid as my second team forward, bump Gobert up to second team center, and have Capella as my third team center.
Really?
I would rather do that than put Trae Young on an all NBA team.
Oh, wow. Okay. I would put Bam above Capella. That's interesting.
Oh, I think Capella's been better than Bam this year. I think really highly of Clint Capella.
Clearly, you do. The other big one's going to be Westbrook because he averaged a triple-double. Oh, listen, I'm with you. I get the counting stats are impressive. There are things he does that benefit him but cost his team's wins, and there's a long track record for this.
It's the Anthony Edwards discussion. Russell Westbrook was actively bad for, I don't know how many, 30, 40 games this year.
It is literally up until the trade deadline when they lost. They blew that second half game to the Knicks, and he shot ridiculously poorly,
you know,
in the second half. And then since that game, he's averaged like 27, 13, and 16 since then.
But again, if like, you know, people are going to be like, oh, he was hurt, adjusting to a new team. Like, I don't care. Like, this is all NBA. This is MVP. Mm-hmm. These are major awards. If you like it, the time for excuses is done. If you don't make it, you know, there could be a caveat to why you don't make it. I'm happy to say to anybody who ever asked me about Russell Westbrook not making an NBA team, like, well, he was hurt, so that's why he didn't make it. But he didn't make it. That's the point. And he better not make it this year. That would be, if he made it over Booker or Mitchell, I would put him in over Young. But again,
I'm more preparing myself for the talking points that will make it onto the national stage the next day after the teams are announced. And it's like, how does Russell Westbrook not make an all NBA team averaging a triple double? And that will be the conversation.
And that'll be really the other guy that I think does deserve mention, I guess, because he's the second best player on a top seed, as is Mitchell, but we mentioned Mitchell, is Ben Simmons.
I was waiting for it. But yeah. I think what he does, Well, I actually think he has a stronger case than Russ because of how.
Oh, I agree.
How the Sixers played when Embiid was out.
I completely agree. He has a better case than Russ. And then for that matter, I think Jaylen Brown would have at least been in the conversation had he not gotten injured late, which I think he was already on the fringes for me. And then that pushed him out of it. Last guy I will mention is Zach LaVine. Not in, but deserves mention.
I see what you're doing. You're saying, oh, there's a Knicks podcast out there that thought you should have been in consideration, even though you missed the playoffs.
No, his shooting numbers are ridiculous. His shooting numbers are absolutely
knock him
insane.
Up. Tell him more how great he was, John. But again, free agency is only a year away.
Yeah, there you go. I actually don't even want Zach. Zach LaVine was last summer. We moved our sights
again. Broadened our horizons.
Broadened our horizons.
John Macri once said.
Okay. I think I have to go get Ralph's Ices with my daughter. So
what's your flavor? What do you get when you go to Ralph's?
If I'm being healthy, I get mango. If I'm not, I'm getting chocolate fudge brownie.
What are you going to Ralph's to be healthy for?
I know.
It's like when people get a salad at Wendy's. It's like, what are you doing?
on that note, if there's nothing else, is there anything else?
No, just as John said, 5 days of content this week. To be honest, expect content every day until the Knicks are eliminated. That is what I will say on behalf of Knicks Film School.
And look, we're doing it because it deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, on that note.
Used to do games after 66 losses. Of course, we're going to now go overboard with the content.
It wasn't
when
66.
They're winning.
It was
60, whatever.
It was 65.
Did you really just do that necessary correction, John?
I did.
Okay.
On that note, everybody enjoy my conversation with Steve Holman. Joining us now on the Knicks Film School podcast. You know, we don't get a ton of Hall of Famers on here. So this one is a pretty big deal. He is a member of the Atlanta Sports Hall of Fame. He is a member of the Georgia Radio Hall of Fame. Honestly, though, for me, more impressive than that, I was always told if you're going to do something and you enjoy it and you're good at it, do it for a while. And our guest today, well, he's been doing his job for a little while. I believe the number is, it's 27. I'm going to ask him what the exact, I should have the exact number on me. I know it's 27 something. He's the voice of the Atlanta Hawks, Steve Holman. How are you, Steve?
Great, Jonathan. Thank you. It's nice to be with you guys. It's 27-20 right now.
27-20. Okay. I should have had that handy. That's a bad job by me. Thank you so much for joining us. Before we get into, series.
The other awards, by the way, it's just like if you live long enough, you win stuff. So.
Well, I mean, and it's funny because I actually cut your accolade short. I mean, you've been named the Georgia Sportscaster of the Year. It seems like every other year now for, the last decade. I was about to say, before I get into any of the stuff about this series and the Hawks and all that, I have to ask, what's it like to be a living legend and be doing your job that you still love?
I don't look at it that way. You know, I just look at it as I go do my job every day and. It's one of those things that, I started counting when our old buddy John Sterling went to New York to start doing the Yankees. See, we had done the games together. I started 85, 86. And when he would do TV, I would do radio.
Okay.
And then on the games that weren't on TV, and there weren't as many games on TV, obviously, then as there are now. But on the other games, I would be with John. And my role then would be, that's right, John. That would be.
So you played the Susan Wolman role, basically, yes, back in the day.
Pretty much, yeah. On the games that weren't on TV, but we have a great friendship. I talk to John at least probably once a week. My kids always called him Uncle John, and I still, when we were traveling, every time we'd come to New York, we would have dinner together. So hopefully, we'll get back to that again next season.
Yeah, it'll be nice to get back to normal. It's actually, so one of the interesting things I think about this series is that, as I'm sure you remember, the final moments of the 2019-2020 NBA season took place in Atlanta with the Knicks playing the Hawks. And as we kind of got the news of what was going down before we get to this season, could you just share what was that night like for you? I'm sure it was quite a surreal experience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we were one of the last games that went on that night. And I started to get some texts around the third quarter that something was up and that something was happening with that game with Oklahoma City and the Utah Jazz, and that something was about to happen. And it kind of filtered through a little bit too. I know Trey Young's dad, who sits in the second row, he got worried about it. And he told Trey at some point, you know, when he was walking by him or whatever, if you remember, I think the Hawks were down by like 20 something points, 25 points in that game. Trey got the word that, you know, we were going to shut down after the game. So he went crazy in that fourth quarter. And
I remember that.
Remember, it went into overtime. The Knicks ended up winning. But also significant that night was Vince Carter, who, you know, playing in his last game ever. Trey set him up for a three-pointer right at the end of that game, and he knocked it down. And that was something that, you know, he remembers now. And he does a lot of our TV work, Vince does, and he still talks about that now. But, you know, we had had all these plans for Vince Carter night and everything else at the end of the season, so we never got to do that for him. But it was a weird night, that's for sure. And as you guys know, that was one of our, you know, final games that was played in the NBA. But we didn't know at that point we would be shut down for, you know, what, 9 months or whatever it was before we came back again.
Yeah. And you know, like us here in New York with the Knicks, Atlanta was not invited to the bubble. So it's been a really long wait.
Uh-huh. And that really hurt. I think that hurt really the teams that didn't get to go. Mm. But I think as the NBA would look back on that, it went so well, the bubble. Yeah. I don't think they knew that, but it went so well. I think if they had known that, they would have gone ahead and invited all 30 teams, I think. But it would have, especially our team, being as young as we are, it would have certainly helped a lot to get those final 15 games in, you know, just to carry into this season, because it took a while to get things going.
So that's a great transition, because I feel like every, you know, I was about to say every NBA season is its own unique story. And you've told a lot of those stories. The Hawks have, you know, a rich history. I mean, I grew up with Dominique, and then obviously we had the Joe Johnson and the, you know, the Josh Smith, you know, those teams. And then, you know, more recently the Budenholzer teams, and now this. It feels like this has not been one season for the Atlanta Hawks. It feels like it's been two different seasons.
That's a great point. It has been two seasons. You know, March 1st, the Hawks were 14-20, and that was under the old regime. You know, and then the Nate McMillan administration took over, if you will, on March 1st. And, you know, he's gone 27-11. And there were also three games that he coached while Lloyd Pierce was on paternity leave, and he won two out of three of those. So if, in reality, the Hawks are 29-12 under Nate McMillan.
Incredible.
And in those first games, the 14-20 part of the season, when things looked very bleak, out of the 20 losses, there were 11 of those where the Hawks had leads in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, that's a lot of games to lose out of 20. So it really, the whole thing just turned around amazingly when Nate took over. He talks a lot about, tells the guys to believe. They've been able to come back from 15, 17 points in the fourth quarter several times since then. So it's really been an amazing turnaround, something that, you know, I don't think I can recall seeing. And, you know, I don't know if any team that changed coaches midstream like this has done as well as the Hawks have done. And the guys just love Nate McMillan. And I think the reason they've responded is, you know, they know, they respect that he was a great player, you know, not a great player, but a good solid.
Oh, he was, I remember Nate.
I mean,
he
very
was
good player.
Yeah.
But they respect that he was a player. They also know that he's been a head coach in the league for 15 years. So I think they really were listening to that and they bought in. And, you know, it's amazing when you get a veteran coach in there who just the little things like knowing when to call a timeout, you know, I mean, it makes such a difference because they can regroup, they can get things back on track. And that's been one of the great things. And Trey has really responded to Nate McMillan. He was just named as the Eastern Conference Player of the Week.
Congratulations to him.
Yeah, so I mean, he's responded. He's become, like we like to say in sports, the floor general. You know, he's given up some points, certainly, but his assist average is almost 9.5, and he's just been phenomenal. And as we've gotten guys back and healthy, it's really started to snowball in the right direction for the Hawks. And I going into this week, it's the first time, except for Cam Reddish, that they've really had everybody healthy. And last night, DeAndre Hunter, who had been out for, you know, he only played 22 games, came back for the last few. But last night, it seemed like it was the first time that he really felt comfortable again. And, you know, a lot of people probably don't look at DeAndre Hunter as one of the main guys for the Hawks. But when he went out, he was the third leading scorer on the team. And behind Clint Capella, he's probably the Hawks' best defensive player.
Yeah.
So if he's back and healthy, and this goes for both teams too, the Knicks and the Hawks, I think the best thing that's going to be and really all the teams in the playoffs is this week off and be able to practice, to have real practices that they haven't been able to have all year because of the crazy schedule. So I think it's going to make for much better playoff games than we saw a lot of times in the regular season this year.
I completely agree with you, I think. And plus, you know, you mentioned Nate McMillan, been around for a very long time. He is going to use this time to his advantage to game plan for, I think, what has been a Knicks offense that has given the Hawks some problems. And at the same time, Tom Thibodeau is going to need every second he can get to game plan against the Atlanta Hawks.
You know, it's interesting that the three games, two of them were under the former administration. And the one that Nate McMillan coached, if you remember, it was at the Garden.
I remember it well.
And the Hawks had an 11-point lead in that game early in the fourth quarter. And that's when Trey went down with that ankle injury. And a little bit later on from that, Clint Capella fell on his back, although he did come back into the game. But the Hawks still had a chance to win that game. Our third string point guard, Brandon Goodwin, missed a free throw that probably would have won that game. So they went into overtime and the Hawks just ran out of gas. But it's a totally different time right now than it was during the first two games. So I think that makes it an interesting series too. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, you probably have, but when I started to work on everything today for the games this weekend, whatever they are, it's amazing that both teams have the same exact record, number one. They have the same exact home record.
Yep.
They have the same exact road record, and they're both 2-2 in overtime. So how can you, you know, how can it be any more even than that, really?
Well, I remember that overtime game well, and I remember sitting all I was thinking on your last possession of the regulation was, please don't let Bogdanovich get a clean shot. And then sure enough, Bogdanovich gets a clean shot and it goes in. He's really good. And, we could talk. You've obviously mentioned Trey. You've mentioned Clint Capella. I also think, you know, it has to be pointed out that right when McMillan took over happened to be when Bogdanovich came back because he was on the shelf for all that time. From afar, it seems like the team has really figured something out let me ask you, is it him maybe taking on, do you think, some of like the playmaking from Trey, or just maybe being able to make shots? He hasn't missed from three in seemingly, you know, 2 months. What is it about Bogey that you think gives this team an added dimension?
Well, I think the health has certainly been a key factor for him because he struggled early in the year. He had a couple of different injuries off and on. And now that he's healthy and it's starting again, it's really been terrific. And, you know, you guys know very well Danilo Gallinari, what he can do. And he's really started to come on, too. There was a game a couple of weeks ago where Bogdanovich ended up with 7 three-pointers in the first half. Gallo ends up with 7 in the second half. So, you know, there's 14 three-pointers between the two of them. So, you know, if one doesn't kill you, the other one might. So, and I think the bench is something that's really been important for the Hawks too, especially now that they're healthy. If they decide to slide DeAndre Hunter back into that starting lineup, you know, that means that you've got a second unit being run by Lou Williams, who certainly has been around the block. Then you've got Tony Snell out there. You've got Gallo out there. You've got Kevin Huerter, who's been a starter for most of the season, coming off the bench. He's another shooter. And I think something's going to be very special for the Hawks is Onyeka Okongwu.
He's coming on.
number six pick in the draft, yep, who, you know, was hurt early. He didn't participate in the short training camp, and it took him a while to get going. But he's really come on, and in the final game of the year, he had, you know, a double-double, 21 points. I think he had 15 rebounds. And so to go with Clint Capella, he becomes now a regular part of the rotation. And that second unit is very important. And Onyeka talks about how Lou Williams, since he arrived here 24 games ago, has really taken him under his wing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he's always talking to him. He's always in his ear. And I asked Lou one night on our post-game show, you know, about his relationship with him. He said, hey, I need to have a big guy out there in the second unit with me. That's what makes my game go. He said, I have to have somebody, you know, and he said, I've taken this kid and, you know, put him on my shoulders, and here we go.
That's so interesting, because we have a similar dynamic here with Derrick Rose, you know, another point guard of some renown, and Obi Toppin, who, and Obi has talked a lot about what Rose has meant to him. In terms of, you know, you just laid it out, 1 to 10. There's an argument that, look, some teams are very, Brooklyn's very top heavy. You know, Philly obviously has their pieces. Right. Milwaukee has their pieces, but 1 to 10. And I say this having, you know, once rooted for Danilo Gallinari and right, know what he brings there. You guys are
a lot of teams have.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, listen, I don't want to curse in front of a Hall of Famer, but he has some shit to him. Right. He's good. You're deep. And you're talented and you're really good. And I think Knicks fans have this perception, and I was talking about it on the podcast this weekend, about how, listen, this is not any kind of a series where you're just going to walk in and you're going to just take control. Right. Is the expectation in Atlanta and around the team that, look, we expect to win this series and we expect to do some damage in the Eastern Conference this year?
Well, I think that they're pretty confident actually about the series, you know, and everybody talks about, well, they haven't had a lot of experience and the young guys need to get that playoff experience, but they've got guys that have been in. I mean, here's Clint Capella, who, you know, should be in the conversation for defensive player of the year, at least on the all defensive team. He's been in the playoffs before. He's only 25 years old, but he was with Houston for all those years in the playoffs. So he's got experience. Lou Williams got experience. Tony Snell's got experience. Gallo's got playoff experience. And Solomon Hill, who, you know, I don't know how many minutes he's going to play in now that everybody's healthy, but he was in the finals last year in the bubble, you know, playing for Miami. Yeah. So he's, you know, he's got some experience to him too. So I think both teams have young guys that haven't been there before. So it's going to be very interesting to see when things get to be a little bit more kind of rock 'em, sock 'em, you know, a little rough and tumble, and how the officials aren't going to call as many fouls, maybe it's going to be a little bit tougher. It's to see how both teams react to all of that.
Is that, you just brought it up, is that a concern? Because Trae Young, we again have a player not to Trae Young's level, but Emmanuel Quickly, a rookie who has admitted he's
I like him.
We like him too. But he's admitted he's kind of modeled his game after the Trae Youngs of the world and kind of studied their habits. Is there any concern that, you know, the refereeing in the postseason is not going to be the same and Young is not going to be able to get to the line as much as he's accustomed to?
Well, I think they probably know that. I think he knows that too, probably at this point, that it's going to be a lot tougher to get to the free throw line maybe. But, you know, it depends on who they announced the 36 officials today who are going to work the playoffs this year. And, you know, a lot of them have been around a long time. And I think it's going to be something that's, you know, it's just part of it. I think Nate will be very good. And so will Tom Thibodeau about telling his guys too, that look, that don't be whining and complaining about calls, because a lot of times you're not going to get them in the playoffs like you do during the regular season. So I think they have to be ready for that. And, you know, the physicality thing becomes part of it. But I just think that both of these teams, you know, have grown so much that it makes it a really interesting series, and one that I think around the country, they should be able to enjoy it. I do think like you talked about, the national media perception is that, you know, it's going to be all about the Knicks, really, because I don't think they watched the Hawks all year. I don't think a lot of those guys, I mean, I don't think, for instance, I mean, I don't know if Stephen A. Smith would know K. Kevin Herter if he bumped into him in the grocery store, you know.
Well, he should. And well, he's going to very soon if he's watching.
Yeah, but I mean, how many, you know, yeah. I mean, seriously, how many Hawks games do you think all of these guys, you know, have watched this year? And I don't think very many. It's TNT is right down the street from State Farm Arena.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, Shaq or Kenny Smith or any of those guys would be able to find the arena with a map. So,
so, I don't know if Shaq knows he thought Zach Randolph was still leading the Knicks, I believe.
Right.
just very quick aside on Kevin Herter. I had a scout who I have a lot of respect for tell me before the RJ and the Hunter draft that he would have taken Kevin Herter second overall in that draft, ahead of Morant, ahead of RJ, ahead of Hunter. I don't know if he would still have that opinion now, but just the point remains, Kevin Herter's really good. A lot of you guys have, you know, that are on your team are really good. And
he's going to have people that are going to be at the games too, because, you know, he's went to Shenandoah High School up there in Clifton.
Oh, Park. Yeah. Albany, right? Or yeah.
Clifton,
there you go.
Clifton Park. Yeah. Just outside of Albany.
There you go.
You know, his dad, Tom, was a player and, yep. You know, he's been a broadcaster too. And his mom, Erin, they come to Atlanta a lot. So it's going to be fun for them to see Kevin in there.
So, but the thing I really want to touch on is what you just brought up, which is kind of, you know, Atlanta, I don't know if it's as a sports city as a whole, but it feels like definitely the Hawks. It's a city that it seems like, you know, to a man, players talk about they love coming to Atlanta. And yet it's almost been relegated. I feel like the national perception is to this like kind of second class NBA city. Is there, you know, an organizational chip on the shoulder type of thing going on? Like how does that work there?
I think there is now. Tony Ressler and Jamie Gertz, who are our main owners, have really, you know, they've sunk some money into this. They've got a tremendous practice facility now that's connected to Emory University and the medical team there. And it's really a state of the art, and it's 5 minutes from the arena. The arena itself has been redone to be State Farm Arena. It took three summers, much like they did the garden over, but yeah. It's a beautiful place. And I think players, you know, they've always, like you say, enjoyed coming to Atlanta for, you know, all the fun things that go that go on here. But I think now it's going to become more of a destination, because I think players will want to play with Trey. They had a lot of money last summer and they spent it pretty wisely too. I mean, you get Bogey Bogdanovich and you get Gallinari and you get Tony Snell and you get Solomon Hill. I mean, these are guys that have really helped a lot. I mean, and it turned things around from, you know, being near the bottom to now, you know, battling for that top four spot right up until the last game of the season. So I think that, and you know, we haven't even mentioned John Collins yet. He's not. He's like an 18-8 guy, and you know he's on his way to 20-10. I'm sure, and he's expanded his game. He ended up the season shooting 40% on 3-pointers. So, you know, they spread the floor with him out there too, especially with Clint Capella moving, you know, inside.
Well, you mentioned Clint. He's the thing that I'm most worried about. Can you just talk for a minute about has anyone been able to stop the Trae Young, Clint Capella pick and roll? Because from my vantage point, it sure seems like it's pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah, it has been. And when he can't get it to Clint, he gets it to John Collins, you know, because they were the two that worked it all the last couple of years together. So it's been a fun thing to watch. And, you know, Clint Capella has been a godsend for this team. And, you know, thank goodness for Mike D'Antoni not wanting to have any centers on his team in Houston, because the Hawks got Clint Capella practically for nothing.
Yeah.
And look what he said. He's 15-15 just about on the season. And he gets fly. I mean, he just won the rebounding title. So, I mean, he just changes everything inside defensively.
Yeah, I just looked today. He's averaged 36 minutes against us. He put up he's averaged 20-20 over the last two games that the Atlanta has played in New York. That combination with Trae Young plus the shooting is definitely the thing that I'm most worried about. I a couple more and then I'll let you go. But from your vantage point, I'm always curious about this, looking at the Knicks and looking at, okay, how are the Hawks going to, you know, handle this? Can you just tell me what is maybe your, you know, biggest concern from a Hawks perspective about what the Knicks bring to the table?
Well, I think that, of course, you know, we all know about what Julius Randle has done to the Hawks here, you know, in three games. But I think there's so many little things like, you know, who would have figured Derrick Rose would be as big as he's been for them? Yeah. And, you know, he's got the experience that he's going to bring out there on the floor as well. And really, Tom Thibodeau has been tremendous. Yeah. You know, they always talk about him, how maybe he wears out his welcome, but, you know, he certainly is welcome right now. And maybe that'll happen someday down the line. But right now, I think he was the perfect coach to bring in. And, you know, our old buddy Mike Woodson, who was the coach here, was his assistant coach and then got the job at Indiana earlier. I think he's really helped out, too, because he's kind of a defensive specialist coach, too. And I just think that the big culture change for the Knicks has been Tom Thibodeau and what he brings as far as the, you know, just toughness and play 48 minutes, which is kind of what Nate McMillan has brought here. He preaches that 48 minute thing. You know, don't take any minutes off. Don't take any quarters off. And I think they're very similar that way.
Last two. One, I have to turn back the clock because there were few players that I enjoyed watching as much as this person growing up. Can you give me one Dominique Wilkins story from your days, maybe calling games or from knowing him or any of the above?
Yeah, well, the thing is, Nick and I sit across from each other on the charter flights now. I've known him for all these years, you know, and it's just he's just, you know, I don't know if any like special stories about him, but he's just, I always refer to him, even when he played, as the nicest superstar I've ever been around. And he is that way. And he knows his stuff, too. And the great thing is the young players listen to him, too. I mean, he doesn't go telling them stuff without them wanting to know something. But he'll give a little couple of things about footwork or drop step, things that we don't really see that much anymore. And, you know, and he's good like that. And I just love him. And he's terrific. And it was great to call his games and, you know, that famous series at 88 with Dominique and Larry Bird. That was such an amazing thing. And the one thing about Dominique is that he always talks about that last game six before game seven. The Hawks had a chance to close out the Celtics in Atlanta, and it came down to the last play. And Cliff Levingston actually intercepted the pass that was meant for Dominique and took a crazy shot at the end. And we ended up losing by a point. And Dominique always says, well, you know, he said, I would have killed him if I didn't think I had to go to federal prison. So
that's a good line for the best. I like listening to him on League Pass anytime I get to hear him. He's great. You're right. Okay. I can't not ask you for a prediction for this series. Can you give me something? I don't want to hold you to by games, but what do you think is going to happen? How about that?
Well, I think, I mean, let's hope it's not like the 90, for the Hawks' sake, it's not like the 99 series where Latrell Sprewell came in and the Hawks were all beat up and banged up and lost in four. And Bill Walton says it was the worst playoff team in the history of the NBA.
No, that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, it was. And that changed, you know, just to take an extra minute, that changed our whole team after that series.
I remember that series well.
Yeah. Somebody in our front office knew that Latrell Sprewell had come to the Knicks after having, you know, basically trying to strangle PJ Carlissimo. Yeah. And in our front office, there was somebody, I won't say who decided at that point, no more, you know, Mr. Nice Guys on our team. So we ended up getting rid of Dikembe, Steve Smith, you know, I mean, we had a phenomenal team. And then we brought in, you know, guys that we didn't need to have out there. So anyway, that changed. So to getting back to this series, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I can't say how many games. Having watched the Hawks every night, and I'm sure you guys who watch the Knicks every night, you probably feel the same. I feel like the Hawks have a great chance. And I think one of the things the Hawks will do, you know, win or lose the series, I think they're going to kind of shock the world as far as the national media, because they haven't watched the Hawks at all. And I think the Hawks are looking for a little bit of that respect from them. And I think they're going to be surprised at what they see.
You know, I'll say it right now.
I think the Hawks can win the series if they win one of the first two in New York and get the home court back again. Because we're going to have about 8,000 people or maybe even more now that the mask thing has been lifted by the CDC. Yep. But they are expanding up to about 8,000 for these playoff games. And I think that's going to make a difference. I mean, even the small crowd that you guys have had, in New York, is you can hear them. I mean, they make a difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, we got our own news today, as I'm sure a lot of NBA cities did, about increased capacity. I'll say it right here. And again, it's not just because I have you on the pod. The only thing that would shock me is if the Knicks won this series in four or five games. I think the series is going a long ways. There's a part of me that actually just is sitting here and I'm like, I hope it goes a long ways, because again, I have a lot of respect for the talent on the team and Nate McMillan and all the things that we talked about. Steve Holman, thank you so much for the time today. I would tell people, or I would ask you to let people know where to find you, but if they don't know where to find you, I don't even know what to say. You're a living legend.
I'm on Twitter, Real Voice of Hawk, no S, not enough letters to put a Hawks on there. So
you only need one Hawk.
Yeah, just Real Voice of Hawk. That's my Twitter thing. I don't do a lot of Twitter stuff. You know, I'm not one of the, I'm kind of old school that way, but I have it. I use it. No, it's been fun, John. I've really enjoyed this. It's been, I think the series is going to be fun. And, let's hope that, we both do well in the future too. I think it's going to happen that way. And, I think both teams are on the rise right now.
Your lips to God's ears. I hope this is the first of many playoff series to come over the years. Steve, again, thank you so much for your time. And everybody out there, thank you for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. We'll be back with you with another one before you know it.